So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
Brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, where you can go for all the latest we're working on and catch a replay of this show at any time. We're going to have a whole lot to get into tonight, but as always, we can't start without at least saying hi to Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
Doing all right, Mr. Springsteen.
Well, good.
We always joke about actually having to work for a living and to eat and stuff. It's like, damn, I actually took a three-day weekend for the first time in a long time, and then you go back to work, and the weather's kind of pleasant. So, hey, what the hell? Look at the bacteria. I'm feeling my oats. Let's start a war.
There you go, man. Hot dog. You should join Barack Obama's team because that's exactly what they want to do is start a war. Bad joke, by the way. So anyway, we've got a lot going on. I want to touch on a couple of stories. We're going to get into Syria, Ed. We have to. There's no choice about it. But there are some interesting stories going on right now. According to a WDRB story, LMPD Detective Chauncey Carthen has been indicted in connection with a shooting that he was involved in last year. Carthen was working as a detective in narcotics and the intelligence unit in September of last year. He got into a confrontation with a guy at 24th and Chestnut. He ended up shooting the guy in the thigh. Of course, Carthen was not in uniform, wasn't driving a marked car. He was in an unmarked car, and he has now been charged with wanton endangerment for the shot, DUI, and official misconduct. Gee, I wonder why he ended up shooting the guy. Of course, he's put on paid administrative leave. He has been indicted, so hopefully maybe this will be some way to start getting LMPD under control. Who knows? We've got another good story coming on right now. Go ahead, Ed. You want to say something? I'm sorry.
I actually saw that. I actually know the attorney he's that's defending him. You know, and I look at things like that, and it's like, oh, I understand. You can indict a piece of baloney, as they say. But you've been indicted. There's DUS or already, you know, you can already insert there that there's impaired judgment. So, yeah, paid administrative leave, I can see that, you know. I can see that because you wouldn't want to dock the guy's pay and call him a loser's house or something until he's fully convicted. You know, I hear these things like paid administrative leave, and I'm thinking, well, can they put a condition on that if you are in fact convicted that you've got to give that back, or they'll extract it from your pension or something like that? But yeah, basically it's like paid administrative leave. So you screwed up royally, you embarrassed the police department, you embarrassed yourself. You got a DUI, so your insurance, you know, your personal car insurance is going through the roof. Sorry. And you shot a guy.
Please don't pay personal car insurance.
And you shot a guy. You know, like, there's got to be something more to it than, like, you screw up that royally that you get to take an extended vacation.
So why not do this? Because it's taken them a year to indict this guy. It took them a year to finally drop the charges off a false arrest that they did on me for a misdemeanor charge. Okay? So if you're going to do this crap, I didn't get paid for that year, and it's cost me job opportunities. They're not paying me for not being able to work or keeping me from working, because that's exactly what they've done. You know, I'm still waiting for the expungement to come through so that I can go get a job to help pay for this show. So, you know, that's the hypocrisy there. But as far as the paid administrative leave, I think you're right. You can make charges against anybody you want to. So should they lose it all? No, they shouldn't. But here's what you do, Ed. You ready? This is the Ed Springsteen solving problem skill here, okay? You take his paycheck and you put it into an escrow account. If they had enough charges to indict him, then there is some truth to this, or they would have never taken it to a grand jury, not against a cop. So you've got him indicted. You take his paycheck and you put it into an escrow fund, period. Now, if he is found guilty, he doesn't get that money. If he's found not guilty, you give him his money with, say, a 2% interest charge. Give him something because he held his money. But why not? Why should he get paid while nobody else is getting paid when they're screwed over by the LAPD?
Either way, if you're cutting a guy off, I can see where it would cause him, you know, real and irreparable harm. But by the same token, it's like you've got an escrow account. It's your pension fund. So, you know, you can either, at the end of it, if you're indicted, if you're found guilty, you can either just get your credit card or your checkbook out and pay it back, or they can just say, okay, well, we're going to dock your pension, or there's going to be garnishments on your pension. Because if it's in there, the pension is an escrow account.
Sure, there you go. So don't let him get paid at all. He should be drawing a paycheck. And if you can't get that far, then let's take it in incremental steps. Let's take 50% of your paycheck and put it into an escrow fund. Either way, he should be suffering the same as LAPD makes everybody else suffer. There's no telling how much money they've cost me. You know, advertisers are reluctant to advertise for the last year because they think I'm a criminal because I was arrested. Employers, you know, won't hire me right now because I have an arrest on my record. I can't even offset the money I'm losing on ad revenue. They've cost me thousands of dollars. Nobody paid me for their mistake. Why should he get paid for his own mistake? So, you know, there's a big thing there. And it kind of leads me to our next story, Ed, because we've got another story coming out. Last night we touched on it a little bit about Michael Connell getting into it with the district judges. I think it was before you got on air. But anyway, we've got some more updates. Michael Connell has been chastised, Judge David Armstrong, for letting two criminals, as far as I'm concerned, Kenneth Westbay and Shenandoah Carmen, out on their own recognizance just a few hours after another judge had already set cash bonds for these guys. Westbay and Carmen were charged July 24th with trafficking methamphetamine. All right, yeah, that's something, right? They were charged with trafficking methamphetamine. They were also charged with a whole host of other things, drug trafficking, you name it. So there's a lot of things going on there. And what's really interesting here is at least one of them, was a convicted felon and found with a 9mm handgun, glass pipe, digital scales, cash, you name it, it was all there. Westbay, the oldest of the two who was arrested, failed to appear in court, and now he has a warrant, an arrest warrant out for him that is now going to set bail at $25,000. That's because he's a convicted felon. He wasn't going to come back to court and make it easy for him. And Judge Armstrong let him out on his own cognizance. Now he's got a $25,000 cash bond on him. You know, I got to be honest with you here. I had to pay a cash bond to get out of jail last July on a misdemeanor charge. I've never been charged in my life with anything. Now, while I understand that Michael Connell...
Hello, lost you there.
Oh, are you there now? Ed?
Hello.
Ed, are you there?
You're going in and out, in and out.
Okay, that might be your cell phone. But, you know, it's interesting because...
damn it. Really? You think so? I'm going to have to move outside and get eaten up by mosquitoes, aren't I?
Yes, you are. Sorry,
damn
dude. But here's the kicker to this whole story, though, Ed. Because while I'll agree with Michael Connell, the Judge Armstrong screwed up by letting two guys go out on their own recognizance. According to Michael Connell, Judge Armstrong was given a phone call by a guy by the name of Dre, and that's when he decided to go ahead and release these guys on their own recognizance. But I understand Michael Connell's frustration with that, and I agree with him 100% in this fight. There's not a doubt about it. And that's hard for me to say because I do not like Michael Connell. However, at the same token, Michael Connell can't sit here and cry foul against the judges for allowing these guys to walk on their own recognizance when Michael Connell's office kept my case open for a year, screwing me out of everything they could screw me out of for a false arrest. So Michael Connell's office is just as guilty of playing games with the system as these judges are. How do you justify this on either side?
Well, it's like anything, you know. In politics, people are selective. They have selective judgment. They have selective hearing, and there's selective judgment. I mean, you know, nothing that you or I will probably ever actually get paperwork on. But yeah, you know, your case probably got drug out a bit longer than it needed to be because, you know, in some people's minds, you're a dick.
Well, in a lot of times, when it comes to government and elected officials. That's in everybody's mind. I am. And that's okay. I accept that. But that doesn't give them the right to misuse or abuse their perceived authority. So Michael Connell did the same thing. His office did the same thing in my case that he is accusing the judges of doing here. And, oh, by the way, I had to post a bond to get out of jail. And it was a misdemeanor charge, not felony drug convictions or not felony drug allegations. Not a convicted felon in possession of a handgun and drug tools and paraphernalia. No. I was a little misdemeanor because a cop had an attitude and decided he wanted to screw with me. So Michael Connell's office decided they were going to keep it alive and kept screwing with me for a year. So Michael Connell is not innocent here, but it is. I agree with his point with the judges. But don't be a hypocrite. If you're going to go after them for doing the same thing you're doing, Mr. O'Connell, you've got a problem in your office. Fix your house before you start attacking somebody else's. That's at least the way I look at it anyway. You know, so those are the big ones going on. We do have yet another one. Hang on 1 second here. Okay, that's interesting. All right, we do have, I'm sorry, I just got a text message that was very important I had to look at. But here's the thing. We still have other stories going on. We have an LAPD detective that screwed up. You know, we've got Michael Connell and going after the judges. Michael Connell's office is as pathetic as they are. And, you know, let's take it to the next level. Let's talk about the Mitch McConnells. We're still in Kentucky here, folks. We'll move to other stuff in a minute. But do you remember Wendy Caswell?
Yeah. I know Wendy. Yeah.
A lot of people know Wendy, and she's a nutbag in my opinion. But Jake Payne over at Page One Kentucky, rarely do I give this guy credit, but I love the fact that he pointed this story out. Apparently, Wendy Caswell, who says that she's a teabagger and everything else, you know, she got in all kinds of trouble violating campaign law when she tried to run against Reggie Meeks. Well, she's went out and endorsed Matt Bevin, who is running against Mitch McConnell in the Republican primary. Now, the problem here is this. Matt Bevin clearly is in over his head or doesn't know what he's doing, one of the two. You know, Wendy Caswell is out there endorsing Matt Bevin, and Matt Bevin is out there bragging about this like it's some kind of a huge deal that this particular person endorsed him like she has any political relevance or anything else. I mean, that would be like me going outside of my house or running for office and telling the whole world that Ed Martin endorsed me. Does it really matter? You know, that's the thing. Jake stays on tonight, and I love
not,
it.
Not if you're running for a local, you know, a local precinct, and nobody knows who I am. But you know, hell, if it's a national race, I carry a lot of weight, bro.
Yeah. You know, but I think it's interesting that the best Matt Bevin can do for endorsements is sit out here and try to make a huge deal out of this Wendy Caswell person that most people don't know about. What they do know about her is totally negative. You know, and on top of that, you know, she decided that she was going to go out and talk about taking on Mitch McConnell. The same day that Progress Kentucky, her buddies Sean Riley and Kurt Morrison, decided they were going to drop out, you know, they were going to drop that bombshell on their illegal tape recording. This girl hasn't got a clue, but it's disturbing to me that Matt Bevin thinks that, you know, getting an endorsement from this particular person is a huge deal, and I've really got to question his judgment even further when I look at this stuff. You know, what is this guy thinking, Ed? I just don't get it. I don't understand why he's in this race other than Allison Lundgren.
I mean, to some degree, I can relate. You know, you're right. He's in over his head. Even though as an individual he's got money, I think he's finding himself running up against the machine, McConnell. Whether you love him or whether you hate him, he's got a lot of people lined up behind him, and he's done right by a lot of people, wrong by some others. But I think Matt is finding out that a lot of people may meet him, like him, well spoken, whatever, and. But when it comes to endorsement time, they're like, no. I'm going to sit this one out, bud. You know, sorry. You knew what you were getting into. So I think at some point when you get an endorsement, you run with it. And, I just don't see him getting much in the way of endorsements from too many established politicians. He regales himself as a Tea Partier, but Rand, people feel differently about it, but Rand has come out in favor of Mitch, so, Rand is the Tea Party guy. So, I guess doesn't matter who throws you a line, if you're drowning, you reach for it.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's a great analogy, but, yeah, it's incredible to me because this guy was never into boat to begin with. And to continue just making these kind of boneheaded mistakes. Now, he says he's got millions of his own money he's going to put into his campaign himself, out of his pocket. You would think he could buy better endorsements than that because they all buy their endorsements in one way or another. You would think he could buy better endorsements, and if he's spending his money to buy Wendy Caswell, this guy's got a lot more problems than I could even imagine. I want to get to the stupid story of the day real quick, Ed. You're going to get a kick out of this, and this is my stupid national story of the day, folks. Pay attention to this one. A 9-year-old by the name of Tyler Weaver, a 9-year-old, is the latest victim of liberal stupidity I could think of. Why? What happened to him? I'm going to tell you what happened to him. In his school was running a reading contest. You know, all these schools do this summer reading contest now, right? So his school is doing this summer reading contest at his local public library. He wins, and they ban him from any more summer reading contest. The librarian at the local public library banned Tyler Weaver, 9-year-old Tyler Weaver, from any more summer reading contest because he has won the last 5 years in a row. Because he reads the most books based on a list that they give them kids to choose from, they do not want him in there anymore because no other kid has read as many books as Tyler does every summer. And by the way, he read 63 books this past summer. So from now on, instead of letting these kids read the most books and win because they worked hard and they did the due diligence to actually win a contest, the librarian decided that since Tyler hogs the contest, that from now on, the winner will be determined by a random drawing. So the contest is no longer a contest. You're going to get a random drawing. You might as well buy a lottery ticket, get a random drawing, and see if you can win the prize. All because one 9-year-old has worked his butt off the last 5 summers and won this contest. So instead of being rewarded for his work, he is now being punished for it. What do you say about something like that, Ed?
So I think we should all pray that I guess they're going to do it on a weighted average. For every book you read, you get a chance. I think we should all pray that his name gets pulled out, because he's probably going to have 60 or more chances in the pot. So let's all say a prayer that his name comes out anyway.
But it won't happen.
Beyond that, I mean, it does. I mean, a librarian, not to downplay librarians, but it's not a real competitive field. So I guess they probably wouldn't embrace competition. You know, be quiet, you know. But it shows the lack of creativity. If I'm the librarian, I'm going to look at it and go, oh, damn, the kid won again? Okay, well, you know, let's go out and get some local sponsorship, and let's make second prize really, really cool, too. You know, I have a good first prize, but let's make second prize worthwhile, too, so, you know, all the other kids will try real hard for second, you know. Like, really,
you gotta
penalize the winner. Is it possible that we could just elevate everybody? And I tell you what, let's make the top 10 reading kids in this town. Let's make the prizes pretty damn cool. You know, this Tyler kid's going to get the best prize because he's the winner. But you know what? Get it to where these kids that finish second, third, fourth, and fifth look at it and go, not bad, you know, whatever it is.
Well, this is just a total tragedy. I mean, it really is. Because you've got a 9-year-old who is learning the value of hard work and enforcing, you know, their work ethic. Nothing can prove that more than reading 63 books as a 9-year-old kid over a summer vacation. But you've got some dumbass liberal librarian saying, well, this kid hogs a contest. This kid hogs the contest and should voluntarily step aside. That's what this librarian told a New York local newspaper. And because Tyler hogs the contest and won't step aside, other kids are quitting because they can't keep up. Well, damn it, that's the whole point. Challenge your kid. If your kids aren't going to try to keep up, if your kids aren't going to push themselves, why should Tyler have to suffer? And unfortunately, that's the same thing we have all across this country at every level. Whether that is a very, you know, starter, beginning phase of a sports contest, everybody has to get a medal or a ribbon. It's called a participation ribbon. Big deal. I participate in the game of life every day. Should I get a ribbon because I woke up that morning? That's crazy. That's not the real world. And now we're taking it into the education system, and I just think that's totally nuts. Let me go to the phones real quick. Go ahead, Mayo.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, back when Tiger Woods was on his game, does that mean that after the first year and he was dominating, he should have just quit golf?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Well, or Michael Jordan. I mean, come on, people.
Right.
He was dominant.
Yeah,
after
your first year.
Yeah, we ought to celebrate the fact that there are no Triple Crown winners. My God, if one horse wins all the three races, how unfair is that?
Well, I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, this kid goes out and reads 63 books. And he's being told, sorry about your luck. You're no longer going to be a part of this contest unless we draw your name. So now this kid has no incentive to read any books next summer, does he? Why should he? I mean, obviously, the kid loves to read.
He does.
But why should he?
He does. He does because, again, in the big picture, you got to look at the big picture. You read 63 books. That means what was ever in those 63 books, you are 63 books smarter than you were before you started reading those books. That's the real prize. And apparently our librarian shit for brains doesn't get that.
You know, exactly.
If you finish third with 41 books, don't sulk. You're 41 books smarter than when you started this. You know, that's the game of life, you know? Really. It shocks me that the librarian doesn't get it. It shocks me that they're not any more creative than they are. And like I say, the story's not over, I hope. I sincerely hope, you know, this kid keeps on reading his books and he lets them know, you know, and he still, maybe he's dominant. Maybe some kid comes up, takes him out. But I would surely hope that the next kid that wins this, because they're disqualifying him and not counting his, I would think this is an opportunity for that kid and his family to look up and say, you know what, Tyler read more books. So thank you for your prize, Miss Librarian person, you know, and thank you for trying to flatten the curve out. But we're going to give the prize to Tyler anyway, because, you know, he read more books.
There you go. Go ahead, Mayo.
I was going to say, isn't that one of the main tenets against socialism? You know, because why try harder if everyone is going to be rewarded equally?
I totally agree. That is the liberal agenda. I mean, it's been like this. This didn't just start yesterday. I mean, this stuff started a long time ago. You know, 15, 20 years ago is when they started talking about the participation rents and everybody should be rewarded just for trying and all this crazy stuff. I mean, you know, I don't like to see a kid disappointed in losing. You know, my kid played sports growing up when they were kids. You know, I coached them. I didn't like losing any more than they did. But the sad reality is that's life. We lost some games. That's the way it is. We also won quite a few games. We won a championship.
You learn
we lost life. Championships. You know, well, I mean, that's exactly it. You got to teach your kids how to deal with it. But this librarian, I tell you what I hope happens. I hope that Tyler Weaver grows up, goes to college, and becomes a librarian. I really do. Because I think he might be able to help out. I'm serious about that. Because if this kid can read three books.
I hope he grows up and he goes to work for somebody like Apple or someplace like that.
Well, that too.
And he finishes and he finds a way to make the iBooks and everything even more appealing to people, like Kindle or Amazon or whatever. And find
what
a
I
way
really
to make
happens.
Even a cheaper book so that people can say, well, I go to the library. This kid came up with a way I can upload a book. Looks like it. And maybe even can make the computer make a smell of paper.
Well, the reality is,
they just pissed off one really smart kid.
Well, the reality is libraries are on their way out. When I say I hope he grows up to be a librarian, it was kind of tongue-in-cheek. What I hope happens with this kid is that if he is that dedicated to reading and knowledge, that I hope he grows up to and does something to do with education, whether that's developing the next iPad or anything else is going to help people get access to online books or whatever, I don't care. But I hope he does something that's going to impress other people, that's going to use the same work that this kid has done so far in his life to make themselves a better and more productive. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We're at the bottom of the hour. When we get back, we're going to get into some national stuff and, man, y'all are going to have fun with this, I promise you. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, we are back. Welcome back to the Infinite Radio Network. I'm your speaker, your host, and HomeOfLegalPolitics.com. I tell you, I owe some apologies to our listening audience. Something has been really, really strange the last couple of days. We, last night, the first 30 minutes of the show, for some reason, did not play back. I have no clue why. We got the last 30 minutes of the show, and I'm going to have to figure out a way to re-upload that from last night. And then tonight, from what I understand, it's not just Ed Martin on his cell phone. Apparently, there are a couple other people who just texted me that listen to us in the queue. And by the way, if you guys are listening in the queue, hit that number one on your dial pad, and we'd be more than happy to get you on air. They're texting me saying that there's a slight pickup tonight. So I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if it's a Skype issue or if it's something to do with me, but we will find out in the very near future. Mr. Martin, with that being said, there's a whole lot going on. This serious situation is beginning to escalate fairly quickly, is it not? Hello, Ed. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here now.
Strange, man. I apologize for the audio, folks. This serious situation has escalated. And what's really fascinating to me is that nobody seems to want to stop this runaway train or hold Barack Obama accountable to the same standard they held George Bush for screaming about Iraq and Afghanistan. How about you?
Well, I was for Ron Paul. I'm a fan of Dwight Eisenhower and what he spoke of with the military-industrial complex. And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, you're Republican now, you know, you support Bush. I said, oh, no, I didn't. that had a lot to do with me leaving the party for a while, you know, there's wars and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I just, you know, I look at it and I pretty much predicted, you know, a number of people who were going to get in line behind this. And it's just, to me, it's just disappointing. You know, they're saying, we got to go. The Constitution doesn't come into play. You know, I understand that he uses bad weapons, but I still don't understand how it's that awful much worse than starving 10,000 people to death as they're doing in Africa for warfare. So, constitutionally speaking, I just don't see it. You know, and I go back to Dwight Eisenhower and his Iron Cross, speaking of the military-industrial complex, and I think, yeah, you hear people say, well, it's going to be sanitary, no boots on the ground, blah, 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 blah. Well, a Tomahawk costs $1 million, okay? Our schools suck. We've got people starving. Our roads are falling apart. But our government and our politicians are not listening to the vast majority of people who are either undecided, you know, only like 30% or less than 30% are in favor of it. You know what? Listen to us. We're a republic. We're a democracy, but we're a republic. That means you're supposed to listen to us, at least sometimes. And when you're basically, you've only got 30% support, and you're thinking, oh, well, what? I don't know what they're thinking. Maybe they're thinking, oh, well, once we start shooting the tomahawks at night and they look pretty, all the American people will look at it and go, ooh, yeah, we are badasses, or something like that. I look at it and think, well, there goes $1 million, you know, and then when we blow something up, we probably blow up $1 million worth of something, and we'll end up feeling bad about it, and eventually, if the government topples, we'll go in and try to buy the next government off by rebuilding all the crap that we spent millions of dollars to blow up. In the meantime, we'll have to put tolls on bridges, our schools will be dilapidated, teachers will be arguing, wanting more money, having to buy books for kids because there's not enough money for it. And then Medicare will be drained. You know, all this sort of crap goes on. That's what these guys are doing. The American public is only 30% in favor of this, and they're about to piss away a whole bunch of money, and ultimately it'll escalate, and we'll end up starting losing lives all over again.
But that's purely intentional, in my opinion, because here's the deal. Nobody has been able to prove that President Assad over in Syria use chemical weapons at all. The UN hasn't even proved that. But mysteriously, Barack Obama, John Kerry, and their ilk claim that they now have definitive proof from a private source that Assad was the one who used chemical weapons. Yet we know as far back as March of this year that the Syrian rebels were using chemical weapons. So if the Syrian rebels were using chemical weapons, and they've been proven, folks, That's not a myth. That's been proven. The Syrian rebels were the ones using chemical weapons from March until now. Even if Assad had used chemical weapons one time, it was the rebels that brought on that kind of a situation. So let's not kid ourselves here. And funding the Syrian rebels, the United States of America. We're not working with the Syrian government. We're working with the Syrian rebels. The Russians are playing with the Syrian government. So we are the ones who have allowed this atrocity to occur. We are the ones who are still backing the guys who are really behind the chemical attacks. It hasn't been Assad. I'm no fan of Assad. John Kerry and his wife went to dinner with Assad and his wife last year. And John Kerry and his wife are talking about what a great guy Assad was. And now they want to bomb him. This is a joke. This is coming from the same White House trying to convince everybody that Benghazi was based on a bullshit YouTube video. And
yeah.
Found out that was a lie. How do these guys have any credibility to even think about this? And on top of that, Ed, it gets even worse, because now we've got House Speaker John Boehner. He announced today that he was going to go ahead and support Obama calling for action in Syria. He says that everybody should be backing Obama on this, because we have enemies around the world that need to understand that we're not going to tolerate this type of behavior. We're the ones that are creating those enemies by this type of behavior. Would you disagree with that?
Yeah. Well, to me, and I've read reports that Obama, you know, part of his problem was when he said this red line in the sand, that it was off teleprompter. You know, sounded good, but you basically committed yourself to that. And now Boehner apparently hasn't learned anything from that, because now he's saying this kind of behavior won't be tolerated. So basically what you're telling the rest of the world and any sandbox despot that's out there is, if you want to get the Americans involved, if you can convince them that somebody used some type of chemical weapon, then they're coming, because now the Speaker of the House and the President are both saying, we're not going to tolerate it. So you're basically saying, hey, it's an invite almost. Hey, you want America to get involved? Let us find sarin gas or something like that. You know, if somebody detonates or sprays or uses, you know, whatever, disperses chemical weapons on another group of people, we're coming. So it's like there are people out there who want us involved. Maybe they might want us involved just so we spend trillions of dollars. But they're basically our politicians are standing up saying, look, you can jerk our chain. You want America to get involved? Use chemical weapons. You know, you can machete people. You starve people, you can drown people, you can burn people, you can shoot people, you can do all sorts of other stuff, and we might sit back and watch. Just like so much is going on in sub-Saharan Africa and Sudan and places like that, we'll just sit back and watch, and occasionally a movie star will come over and get all teary-eyed or something and say, what a tragedy. But our government won't get involved. Son of a bitch, if you get your hands on just a little bit of nerve gas and you can kind of kill a few people with it, you're basically saying, we're coming.
Well, what's so sad about it, I mean, you know, it defies any logic. Obama drew the red line, if you will, you know, and he did that thinking that he was going to go ahead and be able to make the decision himself. However, the Constitution forbids that from happening unless there's a direct – can you hear me now?
Well, he did do it, Ed.
Well,
I'm sure you've got an opinion on it. I can't hear it, though.
Well, here's the thing. Can you hear me now? Hello, Ed?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing. All right, here's the thing. You know, you draw any line you want to, but the Constitution does not allow you to unilaterally just go out and attack people unless there is a direct immediate threat to the U.S. You have to have congressional approval. So that's why he backed off and went to Congress, because he got called on that crap, and the nation was standing up against him and forced him to go to Congress to ask for their approval. Well, now Congress, of course, is giving the approval, and I think it all comes back, and I think it really all comes back to what you said at the beginning of your first statement. A Tomahawk missile cost $1 million. This is all about money and keeping the defense contract happy. I have no doubt about that, and I'll tell you why. There was a private meeting at the White House yesterday that involved Senator John McCain and President Obama. They all met in private, and John McCain went public and said that in exchange for the vote get to strike Syria, that Obama has said he plans on giving the Syrian rebels more advanced weapons. More advanced weapons. They want anti-aircraft and all these other anti-guns and stuff. So Obama has agreed to supply more advanced weapons, which means our defense contractors get to make more money. And in return, we're going to go ahead and give more arms to the Syrian rebels. The Syrian rebels have already admitted that they have chemical weapons. The Syrian rebels have already admitted that these weapons come from Saudi Arabia. They've already admitted they've used them. The rebels, not Assad. This is a disturbing situation, and nobody is paying attention to this. And I tell you what else is even funny, Ed. The one person you would expect to be talking about that, because they looked to be president in 2016, is keeping their damn mouth shut, and that's Hillary Clinton. What's going on?
I have no idea. She's, you know what? I made a joke, actually, with a local reporter. You know, I asked the question. I said, hey, you think Hillary jumped ship because she kind of saw the rubber was about to hit the road? And he actually had a good response. It was Joe Girth. He said, no, he says, actually, statistically, most secretaries of state only go one term. Only a few have gone two. I responded and said, well, you think she's thankful she got out now? And he says, I wouldn't argue that point. So, yeah, I mean, she's sitting back. I have to say it. I don't really like her. I'm not really a fan of her, but I will give her props for stepping back and not beating the war drums. And, you know, basically,
that's a joke.
She's playing playing it close to the vest. Maybe she wants it. Maybe she was involved in some of this stuff, but she's keeping it very quiet and sitting back and letting other people, you know, probably did an eye roll when Barack Obama said, we draw a line in the sand, and she probably thought, oh, good God.
This is nothing but pure politics on Hillary's part. We'll get to that in a sec. Go ahead, Paul.
Pure politics on everybody's part.
What?
It's pure politics on everybody's part.
I'll agree.
You know, the Democrats, when George Bush engaged in his little military experiment, they were bellicose, vocal. They were in front of the cameras every single day, raising hell about the need to go to war. Where are these folks today? Where are these same folks today?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. I wish I knew. And I don't understand why the media, mainstream media, was chastising George Bush and taking him, rolling him over every carpet you could possibly imagine, doing the same damn things that Barack Obama is doing now. But it's okay if Obama does it, because he's a Democrat liberal. Not okay if anybody else does. You know, and I tell you, I want to point out here too, because, you know, John Kerry and his wife, I've already mentioned, you know, are great friends with Assad. Hillary Clinton is another one. Hillary Clinton said that Assad was a reformer and liked Assad. You know, so there's your hypocrisy. I mean, Obama went over to Libya, shook Gaddafi's hand, and then he bombed the hell out of him. You know, to me, there's a reason that Hillary Clinton isn't talking about Syria, and that's because she would have to say that she has that we have to bomb Syria. She has no choice. She's backed herself up into that corner. So what she's choosing to do is sit back, let everything take its course, and pray like hell we get about it in 2016. You know, how can you run foreign affairs experience as a Secretary of State or anything else, and then hide from the most serious war issue, especially after your foul-ups at Benghazi, is beyond me. But this is systemic. This is a liberal mindset and a liberal media at work, and it's all by design, guys. I really believe that. Defense contractors have got to be loving this conversation. Would you agree? Anyone?
Yeah.
Well, that's a way to shut up a room. Okay. There?
Yeah.
Paul?
I'm here. You're in and out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're in and out, Ed. I agree with Ed.
That's nothing new there. All right. I mean, any comments? Why in the hell are they so hell-bent determined to make these defense contracts happy at the expense of the American people and our economics?
Well, my question, Ed, is more along the lines of why do they want us paying attention to the Syria thing? What are they getting ready to do to us somewhere else?
Well, there you go. Now, I'll tell you one thing that's going on. I'll tell you that right now. This month, Congress is supposed to go back in session on September the 9th. And this was supposed to be devoted, the short days that they're supposed to be in session, devoted to doing what? Coming to a budget agreement. Well, now throw Syria into the mix. Now they've got to spend all their time talking about Syria, and they're going to go ahead and raise the daggone debt ceiling, kick that can down the road again. Nobody wants to deal with the budget. It's easier to attack Syria on borrowed money than it is to sit there and make hard decisions to fix the budget, not?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, more than anything, I think it's just it's just poor planning. I think it's somebody going off message, and we're paying the price for it. But yeah, I think when you look at things like the sequester, you look at the pull that the military-industrial complex has. You look at what what bringing people back from war does to the unemployment numbers, and you look at everything that comes from. Getting out of a perpetual war mode, you know, hell, you look at our leading exports in a lot of cases are military hardware. That's where we're stuck. We have military base content. If you're not using up assets, you know, you stop out. But we can create an emergency situation. Oh my God, we popped the 20. Tomahawk did. Damn it, the Syrian. You know, now we have to escalate. Like, well, yeah, it's. I'm agree with you. I think it's an excuse for everything from the military-industrial complex paybacks to every congressman, every senator. That's one thing I've read before that the military-industrial complex. They've almost made it. Not almost. They've made it a point to have it military contractor to every congressman. Every congressman that votes yes for it stands to gain a few jobs, whether it's making O-ring gaskets or high explosives.
I agree.
They're all queued up, and right now, everything they've done thus far has not really done that much good for the economy. Speaking in terms of part-time jobs and everything, so yeah, in some instances, it's going to give them an opportunity to appear strong. But on the other hand, like John McCain. Well, we're going to get the jobs. We're going to invest. We get the contract to make millions and millions of dollars worth of stuff that blows up, and doesn't
well,
teach
and
kids, doesn't educate
and
kids, but it's like a very, very, very expensive firework. Great, let's do it.
Well, see, and it's all based on a lie, though. That's the whole thing, because the Syrian rebels in the Damascus suburb of Ghouta admitted to AP journalist, Associated Press journalist Dale Gavlak, Syrian rebels admitted that they were responsible for the chemical weapons incident that we continue blaming on Al-Assad's forces. This is incredible to me because one of the rebels, they call him Jay, if you will, says that they were given these chemical weapons from Saudi Arabia. They were very curious about them. And some of the fighters handled them wrong, and they're the ones that set out the explosion. So it's the rebels that set out this explosion. And this is crazy. So this is not being reported mainstream. This is being ignored by mainstream, all in favor of trying to make sure that Barack Obama gets to go into Syria. If this was George Bush or any Republican president anywhere, you go all the way back to Ronald Reagan, this would be a front page story about how screwed up this president, their foreign affairs and their policy objectives are, and yet it's being ignored. We have admitted rebels admitting that they did this. They had nothing to do with Al-Assad. So this is the whole problem for me, is we're not doing our due diligence. Rand Paul's doing his, but we're not doing our due diligence with this. And coming on the heels of all the other crap that this administration has done, I can't believe that John Boehner, and yes, folks, I know his name is Boehner. I call him Boehner because he ain't nothing but a dickhead to me. I'm sorry for the language, but it's the truth.
Hello.
But you've got John Boehner. I'm here. You there? Edward.
Yep.
This is getting ridiculous.
I was saying hello to you. What you call John Boehner?
Okay.
Whoa.
I thought maybe I lost you again. But yeah, but you got John Boehner.
No.
You got everybody's favorite Democrat with an R behind her named John Cain, who doesn't do anything he doesn't benefit from. You've got Hillary Clinton keeping her mouth shut, and you got John Kerry out there saying what a bad guy Al-Assad is. Well, last year he said he was a great reformer and a great friend. So, if this is the way you treat your friends, I'm scared of what you're going to do to your enemies. But, I'm not justifying Al-Assad's government in Syria in any way, just shape, or form. But I'm not getting involved in Syria's government. You know why? Because that's their government. It's not mine. It's not my right. This is incredible to me. And I tell you, we've got more disturbing things coming out about Benghazi, too. Even you know, everything that's been leading up since last September is incredible. We now know that 25 minutes after the operation in Benghazi began, the Operations Center at the State Department got a cable announcing the attack. Fred Burton, a former state diplomatic security agent, and Samuel Katz, who's an author and expert on international special operations, said they've interviewed everybody, and that within 25 minutes of the first attack on Benghazi, everybody was notified. The attack went on for over 2.5 hours, and nobody came to the defense of the Americans, including Ambassador Chris Stevens. After you had 2.5 hours of war against this daggone embassy and everything else, you know, everybody knew about it within the first 25 minutes, and nobody did anything. You know, you had nobody. I mean, even the daggone guys that we were paying over there, the militias, turned their back and didn't get near it. They were ordered off. Everybody was ordered off for a reason from the White House. There's not a doubt about that. And yet, on her last day as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton called up four of the diplomatic security agents that were involved in the Benghazi attack and gave them the award for heroism. Can you believe that?
Well, maybe it came with a bonus and they'll keep their mouths shut or something. I don't know. But
that's exactly
what
it was.
We can't trust our government. And you wonder about Benghazi. It's like, well, if the NSA was listening in on everything, why didn't they hear that? Okay.
Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, really, why? You know, they're like, oh, well, we didn't get the message. Like, well, surely something, you know, somebody heard something. So, you know, we all pretty much assume that they look the other way. Yeah, we know that. But, I look at it and think, okay, so, again, if Assad is, you know, some crime against humanity, and you know, a couple thousand, you know, granted, in the scope of the war, it's just another battle. It really is, because hundreds of thousands of people have probably died already. Millions have died in other countries that we didn't intervene, like Rwanda and stuff. We just sat back and watched it. So I'm just trying to sit here, and I've asked this question numerous times. It's like, why is it that chemical weapons are so much different than, like I say, starvation or burning or raping people till they're dead or hacking them up with sharpened shovels or whatever? I mean, how is it that much different? You know, why have we allowed ourselves, like, well, they shot sarin gas. You know, it's like, oh, well, guess we're going in. But you look on the other hand, I'm sure some victims, like in Sudan and stuff, you know, or even if you go back in history, Rwanda, millions of people being killed, and they're probably looking at this going, what? You mean 1,400 people got killed by gas, and you're going, and a million of our people got slaughtered and just left all over the roads and stuff, and you didn't do anything? What the hell? You know,
it's atrocious.
It's kind of like the Trayvon Martin thing. It's like one human life is worth more than another based on how they die.
And that's the sad reality of it. You know, it's incredible. Man, I wish we would have brought up Trayvon Martin earlier, but I'll get into some of this tomorrow night. But we're going to start really getting heavy, real hot and heavy, into the black mob on white violence. We're not going to have time to touch on that tonight, but I'm getting a little sick of it. So, you know, people can call me what they want to. They can call me a racist. They can call me the Ku Klux Klan. They can call me whatever they want to. But we're going to start outing the black mob violence that's going on across this country because it's reached epidemic proportions, and this mainstream media and this White House is too damn scared to call it what it is. We've already got a race war going, and we'll get into that one later. Ed, you know, we're on the downside, man. Final thoughts.
Final thoughts, like I say, in the end, I'm glad that for a change, like some past presidents, Obama is going to Congress. I'm glad that our Congress people, you know, because I often say a lot of times, I think there ought to be up, down votes on a whole lot more stuff than there is. So, you know, truth of the matter is, I'm anti-war. So, and I don't see our national security being threatened here. So, you know, I can't see the justification. On top of that, I'm just a sheer numbers and like I was saying earlier. You know, why is it so different if a couple, you know, or a thousand people die one way, as opposed to another? That the inconsistency in how we value human life and things. I just don't see going to war. I know. Not at this point. But I am glad we're getting an up-down vote. And I got to give, even though it was kind of sort of had his hand forced, I'm glad Obama's going for it. I want to see who's voting up, who's voting down. You know, I want to see which of the political class millionaires with, you know, kids in Harvard and stuff. I want to see which ones vote to go to war and which ones stand by and see that it's not constitutional. Our interests aren't in there. You know what? Working class America that has to send their sons and daughters and stuff to go fight these wars, they're sick of it. So I'm real interested in seeing who abides by the Constitution, you know, at least to some degree, and who listens to the American public. So I'm actually looking forward to the vote. I think we're going to war. I think they're going to give Barack the green light, but at least we'll know where they stand.
Well, the decision was already made. I think the decision to go into Syria and go to war was already made long before this so-called chemical attack by al-Assad. I mean, the reality is, when we talk about we want this up or down vote, we're going to be able to see what everybody thinks about this. Let me tell you, folks, I am an active duty veteran. I served my country, and I served it proudly. And I had no problem doing so, would do it again tomorrow if I was called up to duty to do it, period. I love my country. I hate war. But I understand that there's a need for war on occasion. But as part of my oath of duty, was to defend this nation against all terrorists, whether they be foreign or domestic. And I'm going to be quite honest with you folks. You can think of me what you will. You can think of this program what you will. You can chastise me till you're blue in the face. But the real problem in the United States of America today isn't foreign terrorists. It's domestic terrorists. And when I say domestic terrorists, I'm talking about government officials. Now, people are going to think I'm out there and I'm on some kind of a conspiracy rant. I assure you I'm not. But this country will take the votes from every one of these damn people and go on into Syria, and we will do so knowing that 70% of the people said we don't need to be there. But you can bet that once this thing kicks off, you're going to see this big rally that says support the troops, support the troops. And everybody thinks because they give lip service to the troops, well, we support you while you're over there fighting, that somehow you've done this country a great service. You've done no such thing. I support my troops because I served alongside a few of them. I understand what they're going through, leaving their family, losing limbs, fighting for something that they don't necessarily believe in. Because every war that we're in right now has absolutely not one damn thing to do with defending this nation. We are defending other people's nations. We have become the world police. Syria is yet the next example of that. For you people who say support the troops, I call hogwash. I say you're hypocritical bastards. Except for the military families who suffer from it every day. For you civilians who have never served, for you civilians who don't have family members in the military, who are risking life and limb every day over in Iraq, Afghanistan, soon to be Syria, you have no clue what supporting the troops is all about. If you want to support the troops, then get rid of these damn government officials, get rid of these libtards that you keep elected to office that keep putting our troops in harm's way over something that has absolutely nothing to do with this great nation called America. That's the truth of it. You want to support the troops? Get rid of John McCain. Get rid of Barack Obama. Throw John Kerry and Hillary Clinton to the daggone sharks in the ocean. You want to support the troops? Get our asses out of Iraqi Afghanistan. Force these people into accountability for Benghazi. Put somebody in jail, for God's sake. You want to support the troops? Tell the defense contractors to quit and start making less weapons because we're not going to deploy them just to make them rich. You want to support the troops? When you get to the bottom of the banking crisis and find out what's really going on with this world money and how they're hiding, supporting all of these rebels across the world, then you're going to find out where your bailout money really went to. You want to support the troops? Get off your ass and get involved. But sitting here telling me you support the troops when all you're doing is letting these troops go over and get killed over somebody else's business. I don't like the Syrian government, but they're not my America. They have nothing to do with me. I don't like Iraq. I don't like Afghanistan. I hate the Muslims and the Muslim Brotherhood and all they care for, all they stand for. I hate the fact that we have millions of women around this world who are being genetically altered over some man's daggone whims and wishes. I hate the fact that we have women around this world who are being daggone and murdered by their government because they were raped by a Saudi who happens to be Muslim. I hate the fact that we have men around this world who don't understand what being free is all about. They don't understand the atrocities that they're doing to women and children. I hate the fact that we have people starving. But I hate more the fact that most of you guys that are listening to this show are going to sit on your ass and make the claim, support the truth, without doing one damn thing to make that a reality. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Day of the Truth will be here at 7 o'clock with me as usual. Thursday night, the TNT Thursday Night Truth at 7. And don't forget our good friends, Ken Moman with Liberty Unbridled on Sunday night. Mr. Martin, you're off for the rest of the week, man. Are you going to be here next week or not?
Well, next week I've got a few more presentations to do, and then I should be off the off my industry speaking circuit. So we'll see how it smooths out after that.
All right. Well, he's going to be hit or miss next Monday or Tuesday. You're going to be in Colorado, right?
Yep.
All right, man. Well, you have a safe trip.
We don't rise, you know. It's like, hey, I'm traveling awful close to 9/11. So let's hope I make it, right?
I hear you, brother. Well, if I don't hear from you next week, be safe. I'll talk to you in the weekend.
Might get indefinitely detained by the TSA. You never know.
Well, that's a good possibility, man. Let's just hope they grow up and fondle you while they've got you, man. You don't want to feel left out or nothing because you don't have boobs.
Yeah.
All right, folks. That's it for tonight. We'll talk to you later. Have a great weekend. Have a great week, folks. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7. Take care.